It's time for a very special presentation of News on the Hill. Andrew Stuckey here with you, and we are going to do a UNC men's basketball preview hour here. Got a whole bunch of great guests lined up. We'll visit with David Glenn from the North Carolina Sports Network. We've got Tommy Ashley from Inside Carolina. We've got our own Michael Coe and Brighton McConnell as well. We're going to take a look at the 116th season of UNC men's basketball, the fifth under head coach Hubert Davis, and the first under general manager Jim Tanner as a new era of college basketball begins. We're going to get our Carolina basketball preview started here by welcoming our own Michael Coe and Brighton McConnell into the studio. First of all, Michael and Brighton, thank you both for being here.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
Absolutely, Andy. Happy hoop season.
So you'll be able to read Michael Coe's work on chapelboro.com, hear his stories on 97.9 The Hill, and you'll be able to hear Brighton McConnell, the host of Countdown to Tip-Off here on 97.9 The Hill. And I am very excited to get basketball season started. How about you guys?
Absolutely. It's good to see a competent team, hopefully, take the floor.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that whole thing of counting chickens before they hatch. Yeah, but it does seem like this team, we'll get into it through this entire preview, will be very different from the Tar Heel team that hit the court last year. They are very tall and very deep and very expensive, it sounds like, based on the money put
that's
together
data,
to bring the team in. So hopefully more competent than perhaps what we've seen at times from the men's basketball program over the last few seasons.
To be fair, there's a tried and true tradition here at Carolina, and I'm aware of it as an Indiana University alum as well, of making that enthusiastic pivot from football to basketball.
Not this year.
That's true. Not this year for Indiana, that's true, but yeah. I'm very comfortable in this role of being like, okay, let's just pay attention to basketball now. A couple of things that I wanted to go over. First of all, Michael Coe, you have a full season of writing about and covering this team in front of you. What are you excited about?
Well, as Brighton alluded to, Andy, Carolina is going to be a lot bigger. That is something that cannot be debated. They could potentially roll out a lineup where maybe they have three players standing at 6'10 or taller. You have Jaron Stevenson standing at 6'10. He would be playing on the wing. And then Caleb Wilson, the freshman, at 6'10 at forward. And then Henry Vessar at 7 feet at center. And that is going to be a very good defensive lineup. I think Carolina is going to be a much better defensive team than they were last year, just judging by the height and size of the players that they have. That was very much a paramount task for them in the transfer portal, was getting guys who can play both ways on offense and defense. Caleb Wilson made a name for himself on the amateur circuit as a defensive stud. He blocks shots. He gets a lot of rebounds. Henry Vessar blocks a lot of shots. Jonathan Powell, the wing they got from West Virginia, he's 6'6". He's an excellent defender on the perimeter. So at the very least, they will be a lot better on that end. I think there still are some questions on the offensive end. Obviously, losing RJ Davis, the former All-American and ACC Player of the Year, that's a lot of production and a lot of shooting that you're going to have to replace. I do think they do have some good shooters. Kyan Evans, the guy they got from Colorado State, he shot about 40% from three last season with the Rams. That is excellent. I don't know if he's the type of volume shooter that RJ was, but maybe it's sort of a money ball situation, Andy, where they're rebuilding RJ Davis in the aggregate and not just replacing him one for one.
I don't necessarily love volume 3-point shooters on paper, so
fair enough.
I could take a tactical 40% for sure. Brighton, what are you excited for going into this season?
I think I'm excited to learn a little bit more about all these guys that are coming in. I mean, there's just so many new faces, which is becoming, of course, more and more common in this transfer portal era of college sports. But it's something that I think Carolina fans are still just having to get used to, because for much of the program's history, you just find these guys, they stick around for a long time, they develop, and then you get to see that pay off, hopefully, in their junior and senior years and kind of usher in this new class. And that's just not how it is anymore. But this group has an interesting mix, Michael, of some veteran presence, some young guys who have experience already looking to maybe make a leap as an upperclassman. And then, as you mentioned, talented freshman of Caleb Wilson, Derek Dixon as well, a lot to like there. And yeah, I'm just interested to learn more about these guys' stories and then quickly see how well they're going to have to gel because of how much turnover there is. Of course, we know that they have a really good offseason program, tons of scrimmages, and we've seen in the blue-white game so far, in the Cherokee game that was played last week, you know, they're getting there, but some of these pieces kind of came to the team on the later side, too. Luka Bogovac only came in just a few months ago at this point, yeah. Weeks ago, maybe. So I'm just curious to see how it comes together, Andy. And we have, of course, the central kind of face of the team. This time it's Seth compared to RJ Davis or compared to Armando Bacot that we've had in years past. But not only will we see how their skill sets actually translate and how they can play in big games for Carolina, but how they are actually playing with each other and then following those storylines. It does feel like a far cry from last year where RJ was very much the central storyline and then the team's height was basically topic 1A. You had to talk about it every single time and that just gets a little tiring. And I feel like with a group of new guys like this, hopefully we'll be able to find a bunch of different stories to dig into as the season goes on.
It's the voice of Brighton McConnell, host of Countdown to Tip-Off on 97.9 The Hill. And so this is a preview show of the season. Let's preview Countdown to Tip-Off for the season. What should folks know about that show?
Sure. Well, we'll still be 90 minutes before every single Carolina game, except the first, where we'll be going straight from News on the Hill into that initial matchup on Monday, November 3rd. But the first Countdown show will be against will be ahead of their big game against Kansas, the second game of the season, and really kind of, I think, arguably the marquee non-conference matchup, although they do have a trip to Kentucky later in the non-conference
Michigan
stretch
State
that should be
too.
Really interesting. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, we're going to continue, Andy, to talk about a mix of, okay, the upcoming game that people will be tuning in tonight, how Carolina played in the prior stuff, talking with a lot of Carolina basketball experts, analysts, historians, in the case of Art Chansky, former players as well. So excited to bring that back, and folks can consistently hear that, again, 90 minutes before tip-off and then half an hour before the Tar Heel Sports Network pregame coverage kicks in.
Thank you so much, Brighton. We've also got Michael Coe here, and you guys want to go get some work done while I make a couple phone calls here,
and then
we'll
look
at the schedule a little bit later in the hour.
Sounds good.
All right, thank you so much. Here in just a moment, we're going to get on the phone with Inside Carolina's Tommy Ashley. I want to talk to him about the roster of this team with so many unknown pieces here as we continue our UNC men's basketball preview on News on the Hill. Before we do that, though, I do want to check in with one of the biggest of the new names on the team this year, incoming star freshman Caleb Wilson, who's made a name for himself on the prep circuit as a basketball player and made himself a name as a big personality in the locker room so far here at UNC. Here he is talking to the media earlier this month.
I love to have fun off the court, but that's not why I'm here. I'm here to make myself a legend here and win a bunch of games. So I didn't commit to Carolina to come here and go to karaoke night. So I came here to be a great basketball player. So I do things that are kind of freeing mentally off the court because, you know, I feel like it definitely is important for you to have a mental balance. You can't put all your mental cards in like in one deck. So I try to do things that kind of take my mind off basketball, but it's hard for me to do it. But it's good for me because, you know, the ball is going to stop bouncing one day. You want to have certain stuff that you can fall back on. But I love basketball and I love the grind. I love seeing myself get better. So that's really where that comes from.
UNC freshman Caleb Wilson speaking there. Continuing our preview of the UNC men's basketball season now in anticipation of their exhibition matchup with a tough BYU team. We are now joined on the phone by Inside Carolina's Tommy Ashley. Tommy, thanks for making time for us this afternoon.
Yes, sir. It's always fun to talk ball, Andrew.
It's particularly fun to talk basketball right now. This is one of those times of year where anything could happen. We're on the verge of seeing this team play a different team for the first time. And I personally kind of love that they've started incorporating this kind of high-profile exhibition that we actually get to see. Are you excited for this one?
Yeah, I think it's a good barometer too. I mean, sometimes folks get lost in these exhibition games with expectations. You know, Seth Trimble scored 30 some points against Memphis last year, and and people sort of ran with that. So you have to temper those expectations a little bit, but it's certainly insight into seeing them play somebody other than each other. You know, I think it'll answer a lot of questions for this Carolina team later tonight.
And there are a lot of questions, and part of that's because Seth Trimble's basically the only player that most of us have seen. I'm sure you've seen a lot of film at this point from the rest of the roster since you are a professional. I'll let you fill us in on this a little bit, because I know some of the names, but I have no idea what to expect. Who are you excited about seeing?
Well, I think number one, and everybody's going to say it, is Caleb Wilson. You know, the freshman is a guy that they brought in. He's a high-level recruit. He's the type of recruit that Hubert Davis has to get, and he needs to have a successful season and be a high draft pick next April or whenever the NBA draft is, or June, I guess it is, to sort of keep Carolina in the discussion for producing NBA talent, producing NBA players. So he would be number one. Interested in seeing Henry Vassar and see how they incorporate him. He's not a traditional big, but I want to see how Hubert Davis will incorporate him into the offense. And then there, you know, Luka Bogovac, if they can figure that out. You know, the eligibility within the school and he plays and seeing how he does. And then a couple freshmen as well. But it's just sort of a grab bag of reach in a bag, pull out a name. Yeah, I need to see how this guy plays for North Carolina, and going against BYU should be a pretty good tell for a lot of these guys.
It sounds like you're kind of in the same boat that I am in a lot of ways, where we just, like you said, we don't know until we see them play somebody else. But your general sense is, you know, it's an expensive roster. It's a new roster. It's a much taller roster. Are you expecting more success than we saw last season?
Yes, and there has to be. I've had the opportunity to see them play this summer, or this past summer, had opportunity to see the Cherokee scrimmage, the Blue-White scrimmage, and yes, they are taller and they are bigger, especially which hasn't really been talked about a ton in the guard positions. You upgrade height-wise from R.J. Davis and Elliott Cadeau in a big way, and I think that'll help on the defensive end especially. And then I mentioned Vassar, and you've got Zayden Highback. Caleb Wilson is 6'9", 6'10". So they're bigger, but they're not banger bigger, if you know what I mean. They don't have a traditional low-post big, and it's going to be interesting to see. When I got an opportunity to lay eyes on them, you know, in those events I talked about, the rebounding aspect of the game is going to be interesting as far as defensive rebounding especially. I think offensive rebounding will be fine. But this team's bigger guards will certainly help on the defensive end. There won't be a situation where teams just go over and over and over at R.J. Davis in the post with a 6'5", 6'6 guard. We saw it a lot over the last few years. Same with Elliott Cadeau. And there's just not much you can do when you're, you know, pushing 6 feet maybe with shoes on against a guy that's 6'5 and stronger than you. So I think that aspect of the size will be important to watch and see how it translates against another team, and then go from there. But back to your original question, will they be more successful? I think they have to be. And I, to be honest, after watching a lot of ball the last couple of years, I don't see how they can't be, because it was pretty bad and pretty rough at times last season. But we'll see. It's a brand new team, like you mentioned. It is crazy that we're talking about Carolina basketball, and one guy played important minutes last year. And it's just, it's a new era. So how it works out, we'll find out soon enough, because the schedule, while BYU is a tough exhibition game, Kansas is a tough real game, and that game is, what, 2 weeks away, 2.5 weeks away?
So yeah.
They jump into the fire very quickly.
Yeah, they definitely do. We're visiting with Tommy Ashley from Inside Carolina, talking UNC men's hoops. And you mentioned they've got some bigs, but not the traditional kind of banger bigs, which I feel like we've seen certainly the pro game move away from that, and I feel like the college game's moved away from that somewhat too. And then there's the defensive rebounding concern along with that. I know we don't usually find this sort of thing out until part of the way through the non-conference schedule even, but do you have a sense on what type of team this will be? A lot of times you'll hear, oh, this team's going to run a lot, or oh, this team's going to be a defense-first mindset. Do we have a sense of what this group of players is going to find identity-wise?
Yeah, I think they'll be better. Look better on offense. I think, at least judging what I've seen so far, the offense is going to be different than it has been. And I hope they get away from the high ball screens at the top of the key and those type actions that Hubert Davis fell in love with the last couple of years. I think you'll see more wing screens. We talked about that at Inside Carolina, where it puts Kyan Evans or whatever guards coming in off those screens into a position to make some decisions. I think they'll shoot the ball better from three-point range. That's another aspect that really sunk them last year, is teams could just totally disregard guys out on the perimeter. And I don't think that'll be the case. I think you've got Seth Trimble is going to shoot a little better, but Kyan Evans is a known shooter, the Colorado State transfer into assumed point guard. Luka can shoot it better, and I think Young and Powell, the two transfers, wings, can shoot it better. So I think we're going to see a prettier brand of basketball. Will it be your traditional, and for the older crowd watching this, will it be your traditional North Carolina offense? Still not going to be that. You mentioned the new era is sort of getting away from traditional bigs and all that, but I think it'll be less stagnant. It'll be less reliant on one guy making a play at the end of the shot clock. And that'll lead to some better looking basketball and more engaging basketball that folks enjoy watching. Will they win? I think they've got the talent to win quite a few ball games, but it's got to come together chemistry wise. And then Hubert Davis has got to show that he can, he's put together a roster. Like you mentioned, they spend a lot of money putting together a roster. Can he shape the roster into a coherent unit that wins ball games in the ACC? It remains to be seen, but I think they will be better, at least look better.
We're visiting with Tommy Ashley, talking UNC men's basketball. We've got this game coming up in exhibition format against a pretty tough BYU team. Then when things get real and we start keeping track, we've got a Central Arkansas game that should be an easy win. And then, as you mentioned earlier, right after that is an absolutely marquee matchup with Kansas coming to Chapel Hill. Those kind of first exhibition against a quality team, one game they should definitely win, and then one where we're really going to find out what's going on with this team. What are you looking for? What do you hope to learn over the course of those three games?
Well, how they defend an elite player. In the BYU game, you got A.J. DeVansta that is the number one recruit. Carolina was after him mightily. Offered him a very solid financial package to be a part of the Tar Heels, and he chose to go to BYU. That's number one, how they defend him. And then on the Kansas side of it, they've got Peterson. That's another one of those high-level, impressive prospects. So how do they defend the opponent's first option? I'm looking at that, and I think we'll learn a lot about this team is, can they handle that? Because too many times we've seen teams come in and they don't have to do – Jason Staples on the football side, and we talk about it a lot, you want to make a team play you left-handed, assuming they're not left-handed. But you know what I mean. Can Carolina force BYU to beat them with somebody other than AJ? Can Kansas do the same with other than Peterson? And then can Carolina get what they want on offense within the flow of the offense? And I think I'm looking at those things right out of the gate. And then what is the lineup going to look like? Are they going to go they don't have a pure point guard. So how are they going to play that? That's going to be an interesting thing to watch. I don't think there'll be a run-and-gun team. I think they'll be able to run. I don't think there'll be a hectic 40 minutes of hell defensive team, even though they probably have the depth to do some of that. These first three games, one of which does not count, they also have Winston-Salem State in there, but Central Arkansas and Kansas are the real deal. How do they look? What kind of faith can they give to the fan base to expect this to be a good season? It'll be fun to watch the BYU game late tonight. It'll be fun to watch the Winston-Salem State exhibition. But people are going to be on pins and needles in those first two games, specifically the Kansas game, because Carolina has got to figure out a way to beat a top-flight program in the non-con, and Kansas is certainly first up for that.
I mean, that game is going to be fun one way or another, but boy, a win would be a sigh of relief, wouldn't it? It'd feel like a whole bunch of stuff opened up for the season if they were able to get a win against Kansas that early.
Yeah, absolutely. And because you've got some good teams on the non-conference after that, but Kansas is really the one that they've got to get. I saw a post on one of our message boards at Inside Carolina, and it may be accurate. I haven't checked it, but Sean May was 18 the last time Carolina beat Kansas. Sean May's 41 years old. I mean, that's where this Carolina program is right now. They need to compete and win this game. It's in the Smith Center. It is a critical matchup for Hubert Davis specifically to get a win in that game. And to your point, it's going to be an amazing atmosphere. I mean, the Kansas Jayhawks are playing in Chapel Hill. Carolina went out there last year and played in fog. And, you know, we saw what happened in that game. But Kansas comes to town. There will be no excuses for North Carolina not to get a big win that game in what should be a fun, electric college atmosphere.
It's the voice of Tommy Ashley from Inside Carolina. We've got exhibition basketball between BYU and UNC, two preseason ranked teams coming up here later tonight. Tommy, we're just about out of time. Is there anything else that you wanted to mention before we wrap up?
No, I think it's going to be an interesting season. We talked about it on the football side, that the football program has spent a ton of money to go all in with Bill Belichick and his staff and all these new players, and they spent money on a roster, and it hasn't panned out. It's sort of taken the wind out of the sails on that side of the athletic department a little bit. Hubert Davis, he's got a general manager. He's got an expensive roster. They've gone all in on that side. Now, can it translate into wins on the court? It has not on the football side. Can it on the basketball side? I think it's paramount for North Carolina's two prominent programs, revenue-wise, football and basketball, to be good. And I think Hubert Davis has got an opportunity because, frankly, he's on a seat that's a little warm. And this season is very much important for him. It's very much important for the fan base, given all the changes that are coming down in college athletics with the debate over what to do with the Smith Center, all those type things just lend to a sense of urgency for Carolina basketball to be really good this season.
That's Tommy Ashley from Inside Carolina. You can hear more about UNC sports at insidecarolina.com. Tommy, I appreciate you taking the time, and we'll circle back and check in as the season progresses.
Yep, we'll be here. Appreciate it.
Time to hear from some community partners now, but we've got more UNC men's basketball preview coming up. We'll speak with David Glenn of the North Carolina Sports Network. We'll go through that non-conference schedule with Brighton McConnell and Michael Coe. And we'll hear from head coach Hubert Davis from earlier this week. All that and more coming up here on our preview of UNC men's basketball on News on the Hill. Andrew Stuckey here with you on News on the Hill with a special UNC men's basketball preview. We just spoke with Tommy Ashley from Inside Carolina. Also visited with Brighton McConnell and Michael Coe. We'll be bringing them back on here in a little bit. Right now, we're going to talk a little bit about head coach Hubert Davis and this BYU matchup, as this is an exhibition matchup, but against a very high caliber opponent, and we will be able to watch it and listen to it here on 97.9 The Hill. Here's what head coach Hubert Davis had to say about having these public exhibitions to start off the year. When he spoke with the media earlier this week.
You know, normally it's been, you know, behind closed doors and private, and you have more of a hands-on approach in regards to, hey, let's look at going up against a zone or going up against a press, or let's do situational stuff. And so, but there's huge benefits in playing games like this. I mean, obviously playing against such a really good opponent in BYU, it gives us an opportunity to be able to take a clear look at us on things that we're doing well, things that we need to improve on, before the regular season starts. Same thing that happens in the NBA, and so it gives us a chance to do that. I think it's also really beneficial for us to go on the road, to take a road trip, to be on a true road game. There's a lot that you can learn about your team, and it's something that is invaluable to be able to learn that prior to the regular season starting.
Head coach Hubert Davis speaking there earlier this week. Davis entering his fifth season as UNC's head coach, a tenure that has been a little up and down. And to talk about that tenure and this upcoming season, we are joined now by North Carolina Sports Talk legend from the North Carolina Sports Network, David Glenn. David, thank you for making time for us.
Great to be with you again, Andrew.
And a couple things I want to get into here. One of them is there's been a lot of attention nationally and locally on a high-profile head coach here in Chapel Hill for pretty much the whole year at this point. And, of course, I wonder how much the specter of Bill Belichick in town has kind of overshadowed what feels like it's kind of a crucial year for head coach Hubert Davis on the basketball side of things.
Well, I do think they're connected, but the decisions are definitely made separately. And the reality with Hubert Davis is everybody loves him as a human being. He's a UNC alum. He's going to get every benefit of the doubt. But through 4 years, he has had two seasons that certainly would meet Carolina standards, a Final Four trip, national title game trip. And then 2 years ago, remember, it was an ACC regular season title and a Sweet 16, which is not something that should be brushed aside easily. The other two seasons probably, you'd say, fell short of Carolina basketball standards. So in year five, he has to take another step in the right direction. He also has to show that he's ready to work with Jim Tanner as general manager in this new world where, remember, this is the first year we have both internal revenue sharing for athletes plus the outside name, image, likeness money. Is Hubert a good fit for this new world? This is the first year where we'll have a chance to find out about that.
Visiting with David Glenn, and in that sense, it's almost like every coach in the country is in that boat, right? We've had like a year and a half of this in some ways, so we're everybody's trying to figure out what this reality is. Do you see any kind of early signs in this reality of what absolutely is working and what we might want to see out of the program?
Well, we have more returns on the football side, and those are really ugly returns at Carolina because they spent $13 million on a roster that's one of the worst in the ACC. That will not happen with UNC basketball. You know, the reality is Caleb Wilson is one of the most talented players in the entire country and has a great chance to be an NBA lottery pick. How great will he be quickly is hard to guess. But the Tar Heels need him to be an outstanding player as a freshman in a Carolina uniform. We also know the Tar Heels are going to be bigger, which will reflect Hubert's ongoing emphasis on, you know, rebounding as a key to winning basketball games. I mean, they're going to be able to rotate six guys that they trust in the four and five positions. And we know that the European import, Luka Bogovac, he's a 22-year-old guy who's been playing, you know, with and against professionals overseas for years now. So he's a great shooter. How great will he be in an ACC uniform? I don't know. He'll be good. Will he be great? You know how this works. You need multiple great players to win an ACC title, to make a Final Four. And that's the unanswered question at Carolina. How great will Wilson be right away as a freshman? How great will Bogovac be? Just good or maybe better? How good of a fit for point guard will Kyan Evans, the Colorado State transfer, be? And what is a guy like Seth Trimble's ceiling, for example? Is he just a good secondary player, or might he be something even more than that? And then you have the Arizona big man, Henry Vessar. I'm still getting used to pronouncing that. They're Arizona spelled it or had phonetic pronunciation of it wrong for his entire time there. But Henry Vessar is an intriguing player who's 7 feet, 235, and can block shots and can give Caleb Wilson room offensively, because the opposing team will have to deal with both of those guys in many lineups. So, I mean, yeah, there's some things we know, but maybe there are more things we don't know. And my bottom line is the Heels are going to be good this year. Will they be great? That is a really hard to answer question. And at Carolina, in the sport of men's basketball, you're supposed to be great more often than not.
I'm glad you mentioned that again, because that was one of my follow-up questions. Was we talked about, you know, an up to Carolina standard season, and certainly an ACC championship and a Sweet 16, I think, would count. Generally speaking, we'd take that if that were kind of an average, I guess, where you're getting further than that, you know, every couple of years, and maybe every couple of years it's a struggle to get to that point. Is that kind of the line that you're looking at, competitive for an ACC title and getting to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament? Is that what we need to see consistently starting right now?
I think that's a fair way to describe it. As you mentioned, some years should be beyond that, but as sort of a litmus test, that sounds like your keep your head above water type mark. The reality this year in the Atlantic Coast Conference is that Duke is going to be really, really good. Louisville is going to be really, really good. And then there's a half a dozen teams that are somewhat like the Tar Heels in that if the pieces fit together, if you build positive chemistry, if you win your close games, if you like each other, you know, on and off the court, if all those things go well, then the Tar Heels are one of those other teams. Join Duke and Louisville, you know, as contenders for the national top 10 or as contenders for the regular season title or the ACC tournament title. If many of those same things go sideways, well, then we've all seen seasons kind of spiral down the drain, not just at UNC, but a lot of different places. The only way you get to the Duke level, you know, a program that has 24 players in the NBA right now to the Tar Heels 11, is to answer those questions on the recruiting trail. And to bring in more guys like Caleb Wilson or a Drake Powell last year, who ended up being a first-round NBA pick after only a single season in Chapel Hill. But once you have your roster, you know, the recruiting is for future years, obviously. That never stops. But with this Carolina roster, it's capable of being better than just a good team, but a lot has to go right for that to happen.
Do you think, I'm asking you to speculate wildly now in the long tradition of sports talk radio, do you think in a private moment Jim Tanner is happy with this roster?
Ooh. I would be surprised if his truth serum answer was that he is thrilled with this roster. Happy is a little, you know, that's a little bit of a murkier term, I guess, the way I'm looking at it. I look at it through the prism of a guy who's covered college basketball for almost 40 years. And I don't think UNC should ever be thrilled at a roster like this one. Again, it's not a bad roster. But Carolina, you know, when Dean Smith won the national title, and I just wrote about this at chapelboro.com, in 1982, His three superstars were James Worthy, Sam Perkins, and Michael Jordan, all of whom went in the top four picks of the NBA draft. I mean, that's superstardom. When Roy Williams won it all in 2009, you're talking about a team that had five future first-round NBA draft picks. Five. Plus Danny Green was a second-round pick who ended up playing 15 years in the NBA and winning three NBA championship rings. I mean, you want to talk about future pro talent. Holy cow. Those two Carolina champions of the past were built on the shoulders of just truckloads of future NBA talent. What does this team have? Caleb Wilson is definitely a future NBA talent. Are we sure that anybody else is? Maybe others will develop, right? Some of the younger guys have plenty of time to become that kind of a prospect. But yeah, you know, Duke went to the Final Four last year with the Player of the Year, Cooper Flagg, two more lottery picks in Con Knipple and Common Malawach, and two other guys who got drafted in this year's NBA draft. I mean, that's where Carolina was for a long time. And that doesn't mean you win the ACC title every year. Doesn't mean you win the national title every year. Go to the Final Four, whatever. You can still have weird years. But, no, I mean, Jim Tanner's been around this school for a long time. So I think he feels good about the roster. I'd be shocked if his truth theorem answer was that he felt great about this roster.
Makes a lot of sense, I think. We're visiting with David Glenn talking UNC hoops as we prep for this whole season. I think a couple other things that I wanted to get to, and one of those is just simply as a fan, David Glenn, as we're on the cusp of this season beginning, what are you most excited about for this year with UNC basketball?
I'm excited about the possibilities. I'm excited about the fact that Hubert Davis and his assistant coaches can look at this roster, and whereas it is not that overflowing with NBA talent roster, I do believe it's very deep in possibilities. So Seth Trimble, for a stretch last year, did look like one of the better players in the ACC. And then he kind of fell back a little bit to a good player, but not an elite player. What does he have in store for his senior season? Kyan Evans was one of the best players in the Mountain West tournament at the end of his sophomore season at Colorado State. Can he build on that, or was that a mirage, right? Jaron Stevenson grew up in the shadows of Chapel Hill and had a secondary role at Alabama. Does he have a fire lit under him now that he's going into his junior year and, you know, being a prep All-American doesn't matter anymore? It's all about what you're doing now. After a couple of okay, but not great seasons with the Crimson Tide, you know, Henry Vessar didn't even start all the time at Arizona. And so he has something to prove, right? Jaden Young was fantastic at the end of last season at Virginia Tech. Was that just a run, or is that more who he is as a guard with experience in the Atlantic Coast Conference? And you could go on. I mean, Zayden High looked really good in the Tar Heels exhibition. Is that real, or is that something that was more of a one-off? I mentioned earlier Caleb Wilson's ceiling or Luka Vogovac's possibilities. Jonathan Powell, the West Virginia transfer, can be a really good three-point shooter, and he's kind of a long-armed guy on the wing that can play defense as well. There's, you know, we're in this new world again where there's 15-man rosters, and there's more than 10 Tar Heels whose individual stories are intriguing to me, and I think several of Hubert's teams, simply when you got past maybe the seventh guy, you just knew that they were not going to help the Tar Heels play winning basketball. So I guess that's kind of, sorry, apologies for the long-winded answer.
I love it.
What excites me about the possibilities this year.
I love it. One last thought, just to kind of bring it around to when we started, kind of about how important this year is for Hubert Davis. I don't think this will happen, but if it were to happen that we start this season and this team can't quite beat Kansas and then they lose to Kentucky because that game is obviously very losable, and then they maybe lose to Ohio State and Michigan State, and then another one that they're supposed to win, they lose. How hot would the seat be for Hubert if they got off to a little bit of a clunky start on the schedule?
It's hard to say. Of course, hard questions would be asked. But this is a weird time in the history of UNC athletics. As people are asking questions about Hubert or questions about Bill Belichick, there is an unusual power hierarchy in Chapel Hill. It's not Bubba Cunningham is the AD, so of course he makes all the decisions. That's been the case at times in Carolina history. It is not right now. Bubba is kind of being phased out. Steve Newmark is being phased in, but he doesn't appear to be. He certainly wasn't the guy who hired Bill Belichick, right? So is it the chancellor of the university? Is it the shuffled board of trustees? Is there some power play going on? I find that hierarchy even harder to predict than, you know, whether the Tar Heels are going to be good in basketball. And the futures of Bill Belichick and Hubert Davis, if they struggle or continue to struggle, depend on who's making those decisions and who's asking difficult questions at the end of a season when things go wrong. And what are those coaches' answers to those questions that may or may not help you feel better about, you know, the ability to recover from an unexpectedly bad year? I do believe Hubert will win enough that we're not having a hot seat conversation come this spring. He is signed, remember, through 2030. Obviously, schools can always fire and buy out a coach if it does come to that. And Hubert's buyout would be nothing like Bill Belichick's current buyout if it came to that. But Carolina certainly doesn't want, if it's a close call, to pay people not to coach. You know, everybody's read about the if Bill Belichick were fired today, Carolina would be paying him $20 million and others a collective $10 million more to not coach. And that's before you hire all the new people. UNC is not in a financial position right now to do those kinds of things, and certainly not in both sports at the same time. So my belief is that Bill Belichick will be back for year two in football, and unless things went super sideways, Hubert Davis would get the benefit of the doubt, since he and Jim Tanner are only, again, in year one. Even though Hubert's in year five as the head coach, they're collectively in year one in this new framework of college athletics as we're still getting to know it.
Well, it's wildly hypothetical. I think they're going to win a couple of those and stay ranked through most of that preseason schedule going into ACC play. But I am an eternal optimist, so we'll just have to wait and see. David, I appreciate you taking the time and look forward to checking in throughout the year.
Always fun, Andrew. Keep up the good work.
David Glenn of the North Carolina Sports Network. Andrew Stuckey here with you on News on the Hill. We are previewing the UNC men's basketball season as they have an exhibition matchup coming up against BYU later this evening. Going to hear from some community partners, and then we'll have more UNC basketball coverage coming up here on News on the Hill. Andrew Stuckey here on News on the Hill doing a UNC men's basketball preview as we get ready for their exhibition matchup against a high-caliber BYU team coming up later this evening here on 97.9 The Hill. In the meantime, I'm going to talk a little bit more about this season, and one of the things I wanted to get into was the fact that we really only know one player on this team very well, and that's Seth Trimble. Over the summer, he was asked what he sees his role as on this team for the upcoming season.
Just a leader. On a good night, on a bad night, a night that I have 25, a night that I have 5, I have to be a leader. I have to be the voice for this team, and I have to be the guy who, you know, Coach Davis can just rely on when his voice may not be as heard as he wants it to be in that moment. We had that guy the last couple of years. And now we don't this year coming into a new team. So Coach Davis, he's putting that all on me now. You know, he wants me to be that guy just to be as vocal no matter what type of night I'm having. And then he just wants me to evolve, and I want myself to evolve into the best basketball player I can possibly be. So, you know, if I can play 40 minutes all game next year, that's what I'm trying to do. But, you know, we know that's not realistic. So
Seth Trimble there from over the summer talking about leadership. Will that leadership and all these new pieces to the roster lead to a bunch of wins? We're going to do a little exercise and try to find that out, and I know just who to ask. I am bringing back into the studio our sports reporter, Michael Coe. Michael, thank you for hanging around.
Thank you for having me, Andy.
And host of Countdown to Tip-Off and news director extraordinaire, Brighton McConnell. Brighton, thank you for being here.
Of course.
And we've talked a lot about the team this hour, and I want to look at the schedule now, and I'm going to put you both on the spot in a major way. We're going to go through the non-conference schedule, and I'm just going to make you tell me if it's going to be a win or a loss, and then I'm going to ask for a prediction from the ACC schedule in general as well. So we're going to get a sense of what your gut's telling you this team is going to do this year.
Right.
Before we begin, any opening thoughts from either of you?
Well, it's as Brighton alluded to earlier in the show, they have an interesting non-conference schedule, a lot of big blue blood teams. And of course, they play Duke twice in the conference schedule. So they're playing basically, they're doing a circuit of all the traditional college basketball powerhouses. So it should be fun.
It's going to be a fun first month. I mean, hopefully we win a bunch of games and it's super fun. But it's going to be, we'll just go through the schedule right now. Brighton, any thoughts before we hit the first couple games?
Well, especially talking non-conference, you know, it feels like the past few seasons for Carolina, the non-conference record is kind of what ends up sinking them, or it dictates a lot of what their tournament resume looks like, because the ACC ends up being weaker than expected.
Yeah.
Now, Carolina, of course, was not winning some ACC games that would have helped their cases, but it does feel like this narrative around the ACC has been so strong over the last few years of how generally weak it is. This could be a season where that shifts if Virginia gets a little bit better. Louisville has emerged as a power. We'll see what happens in Miami. We'll see what other teams kind of rise
up.
NC State, if Carolina is good, that helps too. But it does feel like, Andy, you know, how they play in non-conference is going to be very important, and they have some tough matchups there.
They have some opportunities, too. But let's get into it. We are starting November 3rd against Central Arkansas. Are we both calling that a win?
Yeah, I'll call that a win.
Yes.
Thought so. Then here's some discussion. November 7th against Kansas.
I mean, this is the one that everybody's had scheduled, right?
This
like,
is,
it's not the season opener,
so
but
fun.
It's basically
it's
the season
so
opener.
Fun that this is happening on November 7th.
Yeah, I mean, it's Kansas's first ever trip to the Dean Dome, which is a story in itself. But look, these are two teams that had disappointing seasons by their very lofty standards. Last year, Kansas lost in the first round as a seventh seed against Arkansas. Carolina won its play-in game, but then lost in the first round. So there are two teams looking to sort of reintroduce themselves onto the national stage. So I think you might see a little jitters. It might be a little bit clunky play because it's an early game. I do think Carolina's going to win this one, though. I think the home court advantage is really going to help them.
Thank you, Michael Coe.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's going to make all the difference. Kansas last year came in with national title aspirations, and when they played each other, they did look at that time like a national championship team, and Carolina kind of hung around, made it close, held a brief lead toward the end of that one, and just couldn't pull it out. I would say, of course, these two teams are very different now. Both should be playing with a chip on their shoulders, since Carolina just scraped into the top 25 and Kansas is not in the top 10, which is very unusual for them. But I think that, you know, in a toss-up where we're just not too sure how the talent is going to play out just yet, I'll go with the home team and say Carolina pips this one after Kansas pipped last year's.
That feels right to me, too, but we're going to be really excited if that
happens.
It's going
to be quite
right?
The scene. You know Roy's going to be at that one.
That's right. That's going to be a fun night. We've got Radford, NC Central, Navy, St. Bonaventure for the next four games. Is there any cause for concern in any of those games for either of you?
I will say don't sleep on St. Bonaventure. They're a good team in the A-10. That's a neutral site game in, you know, a small gym in Fort Myers. So anything can happen in those multi-team events. I do think Carolina should be favored and should win all four of those games. But the Bonnies could surprise some people.
Okay. You feel in the same way, Brighton? You feel like they're going to win those games?
They should all be, but again, kind of like last year after their loss to Kansas, you might see some closer games, you might see some blowouts in there just as the team continues to figure out its chemistry.
So we're going to enjoy Thanksgiving with a 6-0 basketball team looking at a matchup with Michigan State on November 27th. Is that what I'm hearing?
Could be.
I think it's easy to see that play out, and I'm going to be insufferably excited if we get to 6-0 at Thanksgiving. That sounds great. And then there's this Michigan State game. Michael, what are you thinking about this one?
Yeah, this is a game that I think Carolina, any of the players who were on the team last year and Carolina fans will tell you that Carolina should have won last year against Michigan State in Maui. That game went to overtime. Carolina held a brief lead in overtime, but then the Spartans closed that one out thanks to some clutch late plays by them and some mistakes by the Tar Heels. That was a loss that I think really deflated Carolina last year, because Michigan State turned out to be an excellent team. They were a 2 seed in the NCAA tournament. It sent Carolina to 1-2 in the Maui Invitational after winning that first game against State and then losing against Auburn. So I think this is one of those get-back games. We mentioned Kansas is another one of those as well. It's a neutral location, so there are going to be a lot of Michigan State fans there. They travel well. I see this one as a pure toss-up, but I don't want to get too ahead of myself and say Carolina is going to go on a crazy hot streak to begin the season, so I will say the Spartans win this one.
Yeah, I agree. And worth noting, too, Michael, this is going to be the first time this year that Carolina will have two games in 3 days. Mm. It will be interesting to see how they do, since that will be at a neutral site. It's over the holidays. And, you know, those are big stages. Mm-hmm. With a relatively new team, they will have had some games to start working out those kinks and figuring out the rotations and all of that stuff. But I agree that it is a toss-up, and in this case, I'll just give the edge to Michigan State because second game in 3 days, we just don't know what the Tar Heels will look like.
Yeah, it's basically an NCAA tournament simulation.
Yeah, yeah. And it, you know, that's easier than some of the other MTEs they've done in the past where you're playing day after day after day like Maui, but still, that's going to be a bit of a challenge for, again, a relatively new team.
And to your point, Michael, on don't sleep on St. Bonaventure, that makes it feel even more like an NCAA tournament situation, yeah. Right? Like, you're, this is a pretty dangerous 12 seed here. Let's
not mess
around.
Yeah, they could very well be in the tournament. Yeah.
You can't also look ahead to the next game, which is at Kentucky, Woo! Which is going to be
huge. It's not
going to
get any easier. That's the toughest game on the schedule for the preseason.
Yes.
The pre-conference, right?
Yes, absolutely. True road game at Rupp. That's a tough environment to go in and win.
Any you know, are we predicting a loss there if we're doing this before we've really seen this team play, or does anyone have a gut reaction that maybe it's going to be a
Well,
fun one?
I mean, Brighton mentioned how much money Carolina spent on their roster. Kentucky spent even more money on their roster. Mark Pope in his second year is really, he's done a really great job with the Wildcats, and that program is going to be, they're going to sense smell blood in the water. Carolina has not come to Lexington since, I believe, 2014. So over a decade, these two teams meet a lot on neutral courts, but this is going to be a frenzied atmosphere, probably the most frenzied atmosphere outside of Cameron Indoor Stadium that UNC is going to play in this season. So I will predict that Carolina does not win this game. I do think that if Carolina did win, that would be maybe one of the best regular season results under Hubert Davis.
Yeah, I very much think it would be, especially since it's that true road environment and not a neutral site. And if they can go in and get a win there, it's a sign that this Carolina team ought to be considered among the contenders. As we've seen so much parity in college basketball over the last few years, getting a marquee win like that would not only do wonders for their tournament resume, but just the perception of that team. I think that it would help them then be kind of elevated to, we should be talking about UNC again as potentially national championship Final Four contenders.
We are going through the UNC basketball non-conference schedule and making some predictions without having seen the team play. So it's a
risky proposition.
It's a risky proposition. Yeah. We will destroy this tape, but it's a fun exercise for now. So are we looking at 6-2 predictions at this point from both of you? We're all on the same page here.
Sure, something like that. Yeah.
And then after that, we've got a matchup against Georgetown on December 7th. Is that feeling like a win?
Feels like a win. Yeah, Georgetown is not the Georgetown of old. They're getting better under Ed Cooley, but I think Carolina should win that one.
I think it'll be a really interesting measuring point for the Tar Heels if they lose that game in Rupp Arena, how they come back and respond to a home matchup against Georgetown. Obviously, that program is still kind of finding its footing under Ed Cooley after being out in the wilderness for a little while. But, you know, Ed Cooley's a good coach. He's getting them on the right path largely. And if that's a game where Carolina comes out and struggles a little bit, if they lose to Kentucky, or maybe they win and they're getting high on their own supply and then they come out and they struggle against Georgetown, it's a signifier that this team maybe isn't quite ready yet to handle that big, big spotlight or big expectations.
One thing I do know for sure is that there will be many, many, many references to the 1982 NCAA championship game on the ESPN broadcast and probably in the arena as well.
If we look at the way we've kind of got this playing out, that game's going to feel really important, right? If they if they start 6-0 and then take two tough losses against really good teams, then it's like, okay, this is, how do you respond? You know, beat a team you should beat. That Georgetown one's going to be big on December 7th. Then we have USC Upstate, ETSU, and then the Ohio State University. I assume we're counting the Upstate and the ETSU as wins.
Yes.
Ought to be. We'll see again what's happening at that point and how healthy the team is and all of that stuff. The Ohio State game, I really don't know too much about their squad just yet, but it feels like every time Carolina plays in the CBS Sports Classic, it's dramatic, like no matter what.
Got some overtimes coming.
It's just something about that stage. It's something about those games. And it's the fact that they're always rotating between Ohio State, UCLA, and Kentucky in those games that make it feel very important. So that one, I think, could be one that Carolina wins. I wouldn't be surprised if they happen to drop it, but it will be once again a big opportunity for them to get a non-conference win that might help with the perception of their tournament resume later on in the year.
Well, it's a homecoming game for Caleb Wilson. He's from Atlanta. This game is going to be played in Atlanta in the arena of the Atlanta Hawks. So, you know, he'll be fired up. Ohio State's kind of in a similar situation as Georgetown, where they are a proud program with a really, really strong history. They've won a national title, but they've kind of struggled lately. They have a new-ish coach. So they're gonna see this as a prove-it game, really, to show that they are back in the national conversation. So Carolina has to be cognizant of that. It's a neutral location. Carolina will probably have more fans there than Ohio State, if I had to guess. So I'll say this is a win, but I think Carolina would be well served if Ohio State turned out to be a good team this year, a tournament contender. And the same with Georgetown, because the more of those teams that Carolina has on its schedule, the more quad one games. I know people don't want to hear about the quads in the middle of October.
We're already in the quads.
But the more of those teams that Carolina can play and beat, the better they will be in March.
Totally different team and regime at Ohio State now. But worth noting, too, the last time these two teams met, it was only won by Carolina on that dramatic buzzer beater by Pete Nance. So
Carolina legend.
I have to imagine that Ohio State will probably be looking to exact some revenge there if possible.
Well, if we're looking at a Carolina win over Ohio State there, that would put them at 10-2 going into a matchup against East Carolina on the 22nd before conference play starts. You guys feeling pretty good about a 11-2 start to conference play for this team? I think we'd all be pretty happy there.
Yeah, I think most Tar Heel fans would take that.
It would matter who the two or two, but yes, I agree. And it would feel improved, certainly compared to prior seasons where you're kind of slogging through and you go, okay, they're going to have to win a lot of ACC games, and it will depend on the teams that they've beaten maybe overperforming expectations to help boost their resume.
All right, I need a gut reaction from each of you on the ACC record for this team. Just don't even think about it. Just tell me a record.
Well, they're playing 18 games now instead of 20, so I will go 14-4.
That's kind of what I was thinking as well, right? In that 14, anywhere between 15-3 and 13-5. I think that the ACC schedule breaks relatively nicely for them. They do not play Boston College this year, which is typically a win, but has sometimes been a little challenging. So you can't necessarily pencil that in. But last year, Andy, they started with a string of road games that was pretty tough and then had a string of home games to close it. This time it feels like the road games are a little spread out more. They do have a California swing where they'll go play at Stanford and at Cal back to back and kind of knock that out relatively early in conference play. And I think it just breaks pretty easily for them. I've got to admit, it is still strange to only see NC State on there once.
Yeah.
I think that's going to be very weird this entire year. But in general, I think that the conference schedule looks good for now. It'll come down to, as talked about earlier in the program, how competitive the rest of the conference ends up being.
Yeah, getting both Louisville and Clemson as only home games, I think, breaks well, because Louisville is definitely going to be an ACC title contender. Clemson has always given Carolina trouble. So having those games in front of home crowds is definitely, as Brighton said, breaks in the Tar Heels' favor.
It's the voice of Michael Coe. We've also been joined by Brighton McConnell, breaking down the schedule for UNC men's basketball as we get prepped for this season. Brighton, I'm going to let you go because you've got the rest of your life to go start here. So,
thank you very much, Andy.
And then we'll see you in a couple weeks. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right.
So congratulations and go Heels.
Go Heels.
Michael, going to ask you to hang around for just a minute because we've got a game coming up. And I don't actually know that much about BYU, but you are a sports writing professional. What can you tell me about BYU?
Well, BYU made the Sweet 16 as a 6 seed in the NCAA tournament last year, Andy. And if all the experts and prognosticators are to be believed, then the Cougars should be even better this season. They added one of the best freshmen, if not the best freshman in the country, in AJ DiBonsa. He might be the number one overall pick in the NBA draft next summer. He is that good. 6'9 and can do pretty much everything you need on the floor. He scored 30 points in one of BYU's earlier exhibition games. And so he's going to be a challenge for whoever guards him for Carolina. That might be Caleb Wilson, who stands at 6'10 and is also a highly regarded freshman. It could be Jaron Stevenson for the transfer from Alabama, who has shown some defensive prowess early in his career. But he is a problem. And they also added Robert Wright, a really good guard who played for Baylor last year. And they also have Richie Saunders, who is their leading scorer on that Sweet 16 team. Last year for BYU, he and DiBonsa are both all Big 12 preseason So they're going to be a problem. They score a lot of points. They don't play a whole lot of defense. So this might be an up and down game, especially since it's an exhibition. People might not be going at exactly 100%. So could be a high scoring game. Dibonsa is going to be the story because he probably is the most talented player that is going to take the floor at the Delta Center. So it's going to be a fun one. It's certainly a challenge for Carolina to see a team that is this highly regarded as its first real competition against someone that is not itself.
Right. It's kind of a fun trend in college basketball from the last few years where we're used to kind of seeing, even in the exhibitions, right, they're playing somebody that it's really just another team for them to play against. It's mm-hmm. not particularly a challenge. It's mm-hmm. just like, hey, this isn't really practice. You don't know these guys. And then the last couple of years, we kind of have that trend of them playing these private secret scrimmages against yeah. elite teams. And then, the money opened that up a little bit to where they were doing them in yeah. front of crowds. But it's fun, right? It's fun to, absolutely. This doesn't count, but we're going to see an elite player go against our elite player and it'll be great.
Yeah. I mean, it really helps both teams because, BYU of course is going to be wary of all the things that Carolina can do. And this is something that a lot of times is born out of, friendships between coaches. We saw that last year when Carolina played at Memphis, Hubert Davis and Penny Hardaway, the Memphis coach, played together in the NBA back in the 90s and the 2000s. And this is one. Hubert Davis actually has a previous relationship with A.J. Dibonsa. Not only did he try to recruit him here to Chapel Hill, but he also coached A.J. Dibonsa with USA Basketball during the summer. Hubert was at their camp out in Colorado working with a lot of some of the best prep players around the country, including Dibonsa. So it'll be a cool experience and certainly a learning experience for Carolina, too, because Carolina might not be as highly ranked as they are used to being, but BYU is sort of where they want to be, right? BYU's in the top 10. They were in the Sweet 16 last season. They beat a good Wisconsin team to get to the Sweet 16 and then ended up losing to Alabama. So it's going to be a fun game. I can't wait to watch.
We're visiting with Michael Coe, previewing the BYU exhibition game coming up here on 97.9 The Hill. And we don't have a whole lot of time left, Michael, but I just wanted to ask you, as a person that's excited to watch this game, is there anything specific that you're hoping to find out about the Tar Heels tonight?
Yeah, I'm hoping to find out who the quote-unquote bus driver is on offense. Like, the last season, it was R.J. Davis. You knew that if Carolina needed a bucket, they're going to put the ball in R.J.'s hands and just let him cook, basically. Carolina, I don't know if they have a go-to guy yet. I want to find out who that is. Like, when the shot clock is winding down, or if Carolina is behind by a bucket or up by a bucket in the waning minutes, who do they give the ball to? Who do they draw up a play for? Maybe it's Henry Vessar on the inside because at 7 feet, he is a matchup problem. Maybe it's Caleb Wilson, although he's known generally more for his defense. Maybe it's Seth Trimble, but he's known more for its defense. So they should be a better defensive team. I'm curious to see who their A1 becomes on offense.
Well, we'll get some of that information here coming up soon. Michael, thanks for hanging out and have a great weekend.
You too, Andy.
That's just about going to do it for us here on the News on the Hill UNC Men's Basketball Preview. Thanks again to our guests, Tommy Ashley, David Glenn, Brighton McConnell, and of course, Michael Coe. Going to turn it over now to the Live and Local, then This Week in Music with Jordan Bile, and then it'll be the Carolina Sports Network with pregame coverage for that 9 o'clock tip-off of UNC and BYU for exhibition action here on 97.9 The Hill. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of your weekend.